This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our guest today is the Honorable Deputy Secretary at USDA, Stephen Vaden. We'll talk with Deputy Secretary Vaden about New World screwworm, about fertilizer, and the reorganization of USDA, the right sizing. That's all ahead. First off, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Condition, 68% of the crop rated good to excellent. That's up 1 point from last week, and we're steady at 6% of the corn rated very poor to poor, and that is no change from the previous week. Soybean condition coming in this week, 66% good to excellent, up 1 point from last week, steady at 6% very poor to poor.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our guest today is the Honorable Deputy Secretary at USDA, Stephen Vaden. Welcome to the show.
How are you, Tony? Thank you for having me.
Hey, and so much to cover here, so I'm just jumping in. I hope you don't mind. Here we go. It's the cannonball into the pool, but the New World screwworm, obviously, that's headline issues. What's happening at USDA?
So we've been preparing for this, Tony, for more than a year at this point. The New World screwworm broke through the Darien Gap, that is to say the border between Colombia and Panama in 2022. It hit Mexico in 2024. When this administration came into office, we realized it was heading this way. So we put in place more than $1 billion of funding, and we've been working on preparing for this moment. And that's why we're not scrambling right now. We're operationalizing a plan that we've had and we've been working on for more than a year at this point. There are more than 100 million sterile flies that are being created at the facility in Panama. There will be another 100 million sterile flies that will be coming online in Mexico in the near term, thanks to our help with the Mexican government's cooperation to build a sterile fly facility there. And then the secretary has broken ground on an American sterile fly production facility, which will, at its peak production, reach 300 million sterile flies per week, and that facility will come online in the fall of next year. These sterile flies are what succeeded in pushing New World screwworm out of this country more than six decades ago, and they will do so again. And so, thanks to the efforts of this administration to delay the arrival of this pest in the United States more than a year, when this administration came into door, the best science predicted the spike in the summer of 25, not the summer of 26. This year delay allowed us to put a plan in place. We've got the facility in Panama off the ground and producing. The facility in Mexico soon will join it, and then it will be followed next year by the facility at Moore Air Base. And we will have more than enough sterile flies to push this pest not only out of the United States, but eventually back down to the Darien Gap where it belongs.
You have laid that out perfectly. Again, the amount of money that has been invested in this, important to invest the money, but is it vital, would you think, to have a plan for what to do with that money? And does USDA have that?
Well, absolutely. We've been talking about screwworm here at USDA for more than a year at this point. And that's why the facility at Mexico is soon to come online, and Moore Air Base, ground was broken on it, and it will be online next year. If we had just started doing something now, we would be looking at a year or two before we would have any facility ready to go that could help us push this back. The fact that we've already got one producing 100 million sterile flies and we'll soon add a second to that is proof in the pudding that this is not just something we're throwing money at. This isn't a plan that we came up with yesterday. This is a plan that we've been acting on for more than a year. And what's more, we want to be transparent with how our plans are going and where the screwworm is. And so to ensure that the American public, wherever they are, can have their questions answered, we stood up a special website, screwworm.gov. And for those who like Twitter, they can go to our screwworm rapid response account on Twitter. In either location, they'll find tools to tell them where the screwworm has been detected, what the screwworm is, what it looks like, how to treat it, that it's not a threat to food safety at all, and what USDA's plan is to push it back out of the country. And that is the place to go, not just today, but tomorrow and the day after that, for the most up-to-date information as we deal with the screwworm.
As we talk about the New World screwworm, we're talking about trying to remove something from our ground here domestically. But there's actually another effort to try to bring something back domestically, and that's the fertilizer industry. I know that you can really dive deep into the pool here when it comes to fertilizer. But where are we right now? What are some of your thoughts on the fertilizer situation?
So when we talk about fertilizer, we need to kind of divide our discussion. On the nitrate side, we're going to be blessed in that as years go forward, because we've taken the right energy policy in this country. When we look at our competitor nations, particularly in Europe and other places, they have put their finger on the scale against fossil fuels. You know what the largest input to creating nitrate fertilizer is? It's energy. And we have liquid natural gas in abundance here. That's why a whole host of fertilizer companies have come to USDA and our federal counterparts throughout the administration. We've got numerous new nitrate fertilizer plants that will be going forward and that will also be plussed up because we have the right energy policy in this country. We're continuing to look for additional ways in the interim to get more supplies here. But over the medium to long term, America looks great when it comes to nitrates. When we look at the other side of the equation in phosphate, that's where we have longer term concerns in my mind, because we have an incredibly concentrated market in phosphate fertilizer with just two companies controlling the vast majority of the market share. And one of those two companies has repeatedly come out, despite being the beneficiary of trade remedies, and saying, I'm going to cut production, I'm going to curtail production. Or more recently, if you look at what they've actually done, but don't talk about that much on their earnings calls, they're doing a record export pace to Brazil. So in other words, at a time when American farmers are wondering, am I going to have the fertilizer that I need for the fall application season? One of our largest phosphate fertilizer companies is shipping as much as it can out of the country to American farmers' chief competitor, Brazil. So we are having discussions. I've had discussions just this week, Tony, with our cabinet counterparts. I'm confident that we will have positive announcements in the near term on this. But regardless, I want all your listeners to know that this secretary, this deputy secretary, and everyone else here at the Department of Agriculture knows about fertilizer. And the most important thing that we know is that this isn't a problem that just cropped up with the Strait of Hormuz. This is something that American farmers have been dealing with for 5+ years at this point. It was a long-term problem that got us here, and we're not only looking for short-term solutions, but long-term ones as well, because I don't want American farmers to be back in this place 24 months from now, the next time there's a blow-up in some region of the world.
Speaking of being back in places, for anybody who's had the opportunity to roam the halls of the South Building there in D.C. of USDA, there are two buildings. You've got South and you've got Witten. And last time I was in South, there were a lot of empty offices. And we know that that's kind of the case in some other buildings that USDA has its name on. I just wonder, and I'm going to throw out right-sizing. That may not be the right word here, but what's that effort look like right now?
It's definitely right-sizing our real estate footprint, and you've put your finger on it, Tony. Every building that we have here in Washington, D.C., every building, not just Witten and Yates and the South Building, which you mentioned, but our George Washington Carver Center in Maryland, our Braddock Road facility for the Food and Nutrition Administration in suburban Virginia, every one of them fails to meet even a 60% occupancy rate. The South Building that you mentioned, it's 70% or more vacant every day, and it has more than $1.6 billion in backlog maintenance in that one building. There's no private sector company, there's no farmer in the world that would allow his real estate portfolio to get in such a shape. What we're going to do is we're going to consolidate. We're going to take the best of our buildings here in Washington, D.C., as well as buildings we're already paying for in North Carolina, Indiana, Kansas City, Fort Collins, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, Utah. And we're going to fill them to the brim with employees. And for all of the derelict empty buildings that we have, like the South Building behind me, we're going to give that back to the Government Services Administration, the GSA. And we're going to ask them to repurpose that so the American taxpayer can get some value out of their investment. And the good people of Washington, D.C. can have an active facility behind us that can be repurposed for a new use. It's a win-win for the taxpayer, USDA, the American farmer, and even the average resident here in Washington, D.C. It's a no-brainer. And if it didn't involve the federal government, it would have taken place years ago.
Great points, by the way. Thank you so much for taking the time and visiting with us today. Hope you'll come back and see us soon.
My pleasure, Tony. Always good to talk to your listeners. They're very knowledgeable about ag. I just want to make certain they heard me. If they have questions about screwworm, morning, noon, or night, the most up-to-date information will always be found on screwworm.gov. And that's where they should point their web browsers.
Screwworm.gov. Again, it's the Honorable Deputy Secretary at USDA, Stephen Vaden. This is the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Mark Jekinowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
In terms of U.S. meat trade, really just truing up to recent data. Fundamental story driving these changes. Just a note, maybe that our turkey export forecast we lowered 15 million pounds, and that is consistent with the higher prices that we've been seeing for U.S. turkey. Otherwise, all of the changes, as you can see there, are fairly negligible this month. And in dairy, story here in terms of U.S. Milk production continues to be growth. So we raised our milk production forecast for both 2026 and 2027, reflecting a combination of both higher inventories, more cows, and increased milk per cow, so higher productivity. So more cows and more and being more productive, leading to those higher milk production forecasts. In terms of trade, dairy product trade, changes this month are relatively small. The basic story remains the same, and story I've noted for the past several months now. Butter and cheese exports are strong. We're competitive in those markets, and that is supporting, in particular, fat basis export forecasts for both 26 and 2027. Skim solid basis exports, on the other hand, especially going into 2027, were a little bit less competitive in dry markets, especially given the high prices for non-fat dry milk.
Dr. Mark Jekinowski, chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brad Rippey's a meteorologist with USDA.
Needless to say, condition still being reported at least for another week or so, but kind of becoming meaningless at this point as the crop becomes more harvested across the South and is maturing quickly further north. 27% of the winter wheat rated good to excellent on June 14th. It's far below last year's 52%. 45% of the crop rated very poor to poor, also way above last year's 19%. And we continue to watch all those states from Nebraska southward to Texas, every single one reporting well over half the crop rated very poor to poor, led at this late stage by Nebraska, where we see 86% of the crop in Nebraska currently rated very poor to poor, combination of drought and freeze damage as we wind down this very difficult hard red winter wheat growing season.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Mark Chekanowski with World Ag Outlook Board.
We're able to update our U.S. production forecast, showing a cut in the U.S. production forecast, lower yields, mainly an issue of hard red winter across the plains where drought conditions have persisted throughout much of the growing region there. That reduced the U.S. production outlook by 18 million bushels. We didn't make any other changes to the balance sheet, so basically that 18 million bushel reduction in supplies shows up in equivalent reduction in our ending stocks forecast. In terms of the adjustment in U.S. wheat production from May to June. This was the first time that the wheat production estimate was reduced from May to June since 2014. And then when you look at the entire all U.S. wheat, winter wheat, spring wheat, durum, we're looking at the smallest U.S. wheat production this year since 1970. So the expectations of relatively tight U.S. wheat supplies.
It's the Agribusiness Report.